Next item on the agenda is the public comment period. We've had a couple people indicate an interest in speaking. The first gentleman is not, there he is. And also had a, Bob, you told me that Mr. Francis Chesser was here. Yes. Mr. Chesser, good to have you with us, and you'll be speaking in a few minutes. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the commission. My name is Ellis James, and I reside in the city of Norfolk. First, I want to thank the commissioners for that very thorough and, once again, much-needed discussion involving the issues of overdredging. I'm not going to revisit that because that wouldn't be very appropriate, but I would like to discuss the issue in some general terms in view of what has taken place. There have been a number of incidents over the last several years that I've had the pleasure of watching you, Mr. Commissioner, conduct these meetings. I was a neophyte at the beginning. And I'm beginning to learn, and I deeply appreciate the effectiveness with which you have led this commission. I also deeply appreciate the excellent questions that come from the members of the commission. Sometimes the act of omission is as egregious as the acts of commission that you're confronted with. I think the overdredging type issues are a perfect example of that. We're not talking about financial gain or loss necessarily in these issues. What we are talking about is some within both the development community as well as property owners constantly pushing the envelope and seeking to circumvent the regs and to see how far they can go with it. When you hear people discuss this type of issue before this commission, and they all say, well, nobody was trying to do anything wrong, that may be true in some respects, but I don't believe it is true in terms of what we need to do as a commonwealth to protect the intertidal wetlands and mudflats, as well as the wetland areas and upland areas in general. And I was very appreciative of the fact that during the discussion earlier this morning, those issues were dealt with rather vigorously. I would hope that in the future we can begin to really push hard for accountability. These excuses that often are advanced are unacceptable from the standpoint of protection of our wetlands in general. And you know my views on the wetlands and those issues in the coastal dunes, so I won't repeat those. But I think we have a tremendous responsibility here, and I'm looking forward in the future to the kind of vigorous pursuit of these violations that you clearly indicated as a commission in general this morning. Thank you, Mr. Pruitt.
Thank you, Mr. James. Appreciate your comment. All right. Ms. Chester?
Good afternoon, Commissioner and members of the board. My name is Francis Chester, Chestari, C-E-S-T-A-R-I. I am a resident of Augusta County. I have for many, many years been a sheep operator, both in New York State and since 1968 down here in Virginia. We also operate a wool mill, and we make products that are rather beautiful. and ship all over the United States. In addition to that, I have been a practicing attorney for the last 45 years, but I've been in farming, direct marketing, since I was 10 years old. Sometime in January of this past year, 2005, I requested of this agency a permit to erect a clear span bridge across the back end of our farm, which would join the two pieces together. It's the Jennings Branch in Augusta County. And I was advised that I would need a permit from this agency. Well, in January, I filed it here with Tracy West. And she was very helpful and told me that the plan that I had, which was a clear span bridge, would be acceptable and there shouldn't be any problems at all. She says, in fact, I should be looking forward to the receipt of the permit within the week. Well, a week went, weeks went by, months went by, and this is the 17th month, and I still haven't received the permit. Now, let me explain this inaction. They indicated to me that they had to advise the adjoining properties. And apparently one of my neighbors raised some issues in regards to the quality of the plan. And Miss West contacted me, and she said, I think it would be best if you proceeded to get an engineer drawing. So I did. And I submitted that to the agency. Some more months went by. No inaction. Calls were made by me to your agency. And I was told from time to time, well, send in another copy. I sent them in three times. And I had to redo this all over again. Finally, I was told that there was still an objection from one of my neighbors and that maybe it would be best to get another engineer. So I went and secured the services of another engineer who proceeded to redo the plan. And keep in mind that there is no involvement with the creek, with the branch itself. Although I must back off and say that because of flooding problems that we've had there to our farm, we asked the Corps of Engineers if they would permit us to do some dredging and modifications to avoid future flooding. We did get a permit, and we did some work. Unfortunately, the individual contractor who was knowledgeable about these things, who's done work before, exceeded the 100 thereabouts feet dredging, and there was a problem. But that was all corrected. It had nothing to do with the issuance of the permit. Finally, I received this document, 11 pages for a small little bridge. 11 pages. The Constitution of the United States is one-third this permit. So I questioned this. Then I took a gander at what they were going to charge me. Well, it just blew my mind. When I came here, Tracy told me that the permit charge would be between $50 and $100. Instead, I got a bill for $1,240.75, of which $1,140.75 is for a supposed encroachment across the body of this water. Now, mind you, I am not going into the water. I'm crossing over it. The embankments are going to be on my property, and I have title to the river too, but there seems to be some argument about whether I got it from the King's Grant or not. But anyway, it was conveyed as part of my acreage. $1,240.75. I questioned this, and they said, "Whoa, we changed the law. December 1st, it went into effect." I says, "Well, that's very nice. I says, I applied for this in January. I reread my constitution. There's a thing in there called an ex post facto law. It means that you can't penalize somebody after the fact. Now, gentlemen and madam, that's exactly what happened here. Now, the fact that this agency took 17 months to issue this permit application, that's not my fault. Why should I have to pay for this? And I question where all that money's going to anyway. What am I getting for it? You know I'm a businessman. Been such since I was 10 years old. There's a quid pro quo. You want to charge me $1,240.75? May I ask? What am I going to get for it? Oh, it's a general taxation. These individuals that are meeting in Richmond, per diem, beyond what they're supposed to be there, where I guess some of this is going to pay for their little dilly-dallying over in Richmond. You think this is fair? No, I don't think it's fair. You know, us folks in the western part of the state, we act a little differently, I think, from the rest of the state. We really, truly believe that the best kind of government is the least kind of government. We love that. And we work on that. We are independent people. We work hard. I don't mind paying my taxes. But for gosh sakes, you know, where are we going with this? You know, gentlemen and madam, you, I'm sure, are all familiar with the Ten Commandments. Well, there's actually an 11th one. And it goes like this. I created my people free. Thou government, keep off the backs of my people. Let my people go. You remember that little one? Yes. That's my argument. This is nonsense. We are burying ourselves in bureaucratic nonsense. And as a businessman, I'm spending a tremendous amount of time dealing with this kind of stuff. I need to bring that bridge in. I was told that I could bring it to you and you people can make a decision. Now, I have to tell you, I'm prayerfully hoping that you people will go according to what was originally told to me and that I will pay the $50 or $100 and then we can all be happy and go our separate direction. I'll go back to Western Virginia and deal with that. And if not, then I have to tell you that I will have to take this to court because I truly believe that this is unconstitutional. This is an undue taking of my very selective resources that I have worked very hard for.
All right, Mr. Chester, thank you for coming. You have, if you'll recall, I sent you an email and said you could come before the you could accept staff position and have the permit with the royalties, and or you could come to the commission, appeal that staff decision to the commission. The commission would then hear your case, vote on it. If you didn't like the commission decision, of course, you'd go to the circuit court.
Yes, sir.
I will offer you what I did in that letter. Would you like to come? Would you like to hear this case in June or July?
Well, sir, I have a problem. It's very strong monetarily. I have to build that bridge by July 1st. So it would seem to me that I guess if this decision can't be made today, then I'll just pay it under protest, and then we'll go ahead and file the necessary proceedings with the court or have a hearing in June to review my objection. How would you prefer that I proceed?
I think you'd be better off to go ahead and schedule it here in June.
I'm not aware of any basis to initiate litigation against the state or the agency in the absence of the agency having made a decision. So I think you probably have to come here in June. And if you want to pay it under protest, I mean, I guess the commission can accept that. And you decide your case, and if you don't like what the decision is, then you can appeal under the Administrative Process Act.
Well, here's my problem. You're meeting in the latter part of June. Right. I can't build a bridge in 7 days.
Well, you can't build without a permit either.
I understand that, sir. So my problem is this. If I pay it under protest and then go forward and have this hearing in June, then I'm all set. Because I got my bridge, I have on record today that I'm protesting what you're doing, and if you want to have a formal hearing in June, I'm still timely.
For the record, Mr. Chester, this is our attorney, Mr. Josephson, from the Attorney General's office. He sits with us at each commission meeting.
Yes, sir. I saw that where he was counsel.
Well, the machine can't read signs.
Oh, excuse me.
I want it in the record.
Oh, yes, sir. Okay. Yes, sir. Well, Counselor, would you suggest that I pay this today on the protest, schedule a hearing in June? I already have the bridge up, hopefully.
Your action will be legal at that time. I assume that the timing would be sufficient.
I was probably permit today.
If he executes the permit today and pays it, even if it's under protest, he can leave here today with his permit, which means, as far as we're concerned, the construction of the...
Start tonight.
Yes, sir.
That's what you're...
Sounds good to me. Music to my ears, 17 months later. I'm with it.
All right.
And then we'll schedule a hearing, and hopefully the board will consider it at that time?
Absolutely.
All right. Do I have to do anything formally now, or will you just go ahead and put it on the calendar?
No, if you go ahead and get with... You get with staff, go right down the hallway here, we'll execute that, and then I'll be sure you're on the agenda in June.
Sounds great.
It'll be my last meeting, and I'll be looking forward
to
seeing you.
Now you got a golden opportunity. That's the right thing.
And by the way, I share your philosophy of limited government.
Oh, wonderful.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
All right.
That's just one vote, though.
I'm another one. Before you know it, we'll have a lot of votes.
Nice having you with us.
Thank you, sir.
All right. Before we go into the fisheries agenda, we have an employee that's leaving us and going with the Potomac River Fisheries Commission, Ms. Ellen Cosby. Where is Ellen? There she is, in the back. Come on up. And Mr. Rob O'Reilly and Deputy Chief of Fisheries, Jack Travelstead. Ellen would love to have been here to do this, but as you know, his wife's in the hospital today being operated on, and so... Jack can't be here, but Rob is going to make the presentation.
And honored to do so. Ellen, I was thinking about you this morning when you arrived in 1987. And what I couldn't remember was whether that was a blue car that kept on giving you fits, or how patient you were. It eventually broke down and that was it. Remember that little car? Almost like a little hatchback? A Mazda, okay. Now I've solved the mystery. And Ellen, as with that car and with her tenure at the commission, one could say that still waters run deep in Ellen. She has been a very productive and supportive member of this commission. I think if I can take a little poetic license, I would say that two major tributaries have diverged, and Ellen has the honor of being employed next to both of them. Ellen's leaving to join the Potomac River Fisheries Commission. She will be the deputy to A.C. Carpenter up in Colonial Beach. And, of course, we wish her very well. I'd like to prolong this just a second more to say that Ellen has worked on many aspects of fishery management. She has been the point person for the Baywide planning process, which started in 1987 with the shining Baywide Blue Crab Management Plan as one of her contributions. She served the commission well. Her representation on the Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Commission Menhaden Technical Committee for many years, also chaired that committee. She's worked with industry with crab problems in the pound net industry. And thank goodness, from 1998 until now, she's been the one to monitor the ITQ systems for striped bass, which have taken many interesting twists and turns. And Ellen has helped Jack and others to at least get some rest, because she has done a great job in that process. I don't know how many industry members are here, but I know one thing about Ellen. There will be lots of calls for a little while, and the question will always be the same. Where's Ellen? Because I think Ellen has been both a big sister and a little sister to many out there, and I think that it really is deserving of some high praise. So I'd like to read something to you, if I may, from Commissioner Pruitt, Commonwealth of Virginia Marine Resources Commission, to Ellen B. Cosby. Be it known that on behalf of all the members, employees, and friends of the commission, You are recognized for your 18 and one-half years of dedicated and loyal service to the Commonwealth and the Marine Resources Commission. Your knowledge of the commercial and recreational fishing industries, your fisheries management efforts, and your professional industry affiliations has earned you the wide respect of the industry, your peers, and the Marine Resources Commission. I am pleased to confer upon you this Certificate of Distinguished Service, signed Commissioner William A. Pruitt. So congratulations.
Congratulations, Ellen, and I know AC will be happy to greet you up there, and we're going to miss you here. Would you like to say a few words? Thank you, and congratulations again. Rob, did you have anything else?
No, sir.
Kelly?
I have something to do with public comment.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't believe you guys got copies of these packets. So. Is there a Stephen Clark here today? I'm going to speak on the agency's behalf in regards to his request for a third commercial card for the 2006 fishing season. The problem with this situation is that for the last 3 years, he's gotten a duplicate card, not in 2004, 2005, and 2006, and now he is currently requesting his third commercial card and a copy of his striped bass permit. All of these cards throughout the years have either been lost or stolen. For this year, the first card was stolen from his boat when it was getting repaired. The second card was stolen along with his striped bass permit from his helper's wallet. The problem with that also is that you cannot have an agent working your striped bass permit unless you are on that vessel with that person. It is not uncommon for guys to request the second card, you know, due to losing it, stealing, getting stolen. A third does send up a red flag. And in addition to it, having an agent working your card and your striped bass permit. So today we wanted it to be the commission's decision whether he should be issued that third card along with the striped bass permit or not. In your packet that you've received has documentation of where we've sent him his second cards, where he's put in writing his requests for second and third cards.
Mr. Goof, Mr. Commissioner.
Yes, sir, Mr. Garrison.
How old is Mr. Clark? You have any idea? Huh?
53,
he's saying? 63. 53. He's not old enough to be, senile.
The reason this concerns us is because it almost seems like it's becoming a habitual problem, and you know, we don't want it to be taken lightly of people misabusing their cards, their commercial cards.
All right. Is Ms. Clark present, you say?
Yes.
Ms. Clark, would you come up, please? Please remove your hat and I'd like to swear you in.
Yes.
You swear to testimony shall give be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth will help you, God.
I do.
State your full name for the record.
Stephen D. Clark.
And how many times have you had your card stolen?
Twice this year.
Twice this year?
Yes. Well, first off, we keep all the cards together because you have to have the written license, the boat registration, the waterman's card, everything. We keep it in the first aid kit in the boat so it doesn't get wet. And the striper permit's in there with everything else. My crew does not operate the striper permit. It's just in with all the rest of the licenses. So,
how many do you have in crew?
Just one.
Have these cards shown up anywhere, to your knowledge?
No. No, this one was stolen at Willoughby Boat Launch. And his wallet was stolen. His driver's license, everything was stolen. And
what was he? Was he acting as your agent?
Yes.
At the time?
He was doing nets. Well, he does crab pots, too. But I've had to get new boat registrations for the boats and everything.
That's cool. Yeah.
And it's just unlucky.
Yeah, so you had to, it puts a little different spin on it. You didn't just have the waterman's card stolen. You had everything stolen.
Right. So his driver's license and everything was stolen. His wallet, $90. And since I didn't get the waterman's card back, he's been out of work for 2 weeks waiting for us to get a card back.
Do you have your card?
No, I don't have a card. We only have one card.
Okay. Any questions from the commission? Ernie, you have any questions?
He must be about the most unlucky fellow I've ever met. I thought I was pretty bad, but I've never lost or had anything stolen. Anybody steal the warming card's pretty desperate. I could think of a lot of things I'd rather have.
He stole his wallet.
Well, I think
oh, yeah.
Had everything
I'm just saying.
Kept it all
with a little different perspective.
Watermen are not worried about identity theft because nobody would take ours.
Yeah. All right.
Mr. Chairman, I have a question.
Yes, sir. Mr. Robbins?
Now, based on staff testimony, this happened also in, what, 2004 and 2005?
One each year, yes.
And how were those lost?
Same thing. Well, I think one of them was my fault. I can't remember. I think the license got washed in my pocket or something.
All right. Thank you.
But I'm also the licensed agent for VMRC. I have been for 10 years. Like I say, nobody should ever try and pass that card through me.
Right. Yeah. Does staff have a recommendation?
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
I'm standing in for Stephanie, so I don't believe we have a recommendation. We just wanted it to be decided by you guys and also for him to present his side of the story to understand that this is a very serious matter if he's abusing that card and or his striped bass permit.
Mm-hmm. Rob, do you have anything to add?
Well, I think it does. It is noteworthy to have repeated incidences, so I think that it probably came to our attention. It came to Jack's attention, and that's why it's here today. And we briefly discussed ways that this could be prevented. The only thing I can think of would be that you don't get another card. You get a paper license. You have to have something, though, when you sell to the buyer. There has to be something. It may make it a little more difficult if, in fact, this is a problem, then you would have to go to a paper license. But I don't think we're quite ready for that, and I think you just have the information as is, both from Mr. Clark and from Kelly.
Well, I think based on what he testified under oath and the fact that he did lose everything else, that I think we should grant it. But what's the pleasure of the commission?
Make a motion that we grant it.
Motion made by Mr. McFlesher to reinstate it and seconded by Mr. Bowden. Further discussion? All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstention? Carried.
And that is for his commercial card and his striped bass permit to be reissued.
I think that's correct.
Okay. Just wanted to be sure it was clear.
Thank you for bringing it to our attention.
Mm-hmm. Really? Yeah. Thank you.
I don't know what else you could have done.
No.
Legally. Well, I'll ask you that if it got debated.
All right, Rob, we have a public hearing on Mr. George's pound net, but before I do that, I'd like to introduce the Assistant Secretary of Natural Resources to you all, Missy Ness. Missy, we're glad to have you with us. Thank you for coming down. Very rarely we have a visit from Richmond. Matter of fact, in 23 years, I think you're the second or third to ever come down here, isn't it, Wilford? Pretty close. So,
thank you
very much, Mr. Bowden.
Rob, are you going to address the NIMS issue, or do you want me to bring it up during public comment?
Well, it's going to end up the same direction, so I'll just bring it up briefly.
Go ahead, Rob.
And I think Andy has taken care of me here in a nice way. Back.
By the way, Rob, while you're getting that, I knew you were a great scientist, but I had no idea you were such a public speaker.
My goodness. Now tell everyone how I like to public speak, though.
Oh, you love it. And the poetic reference was
little
great.
Robert Frost there. Little, I hope he doesn't mind.
I'm excited.
He won't complain.
So. Right. Okay. Back in March and April of 2005, this commission took some preemptive management measures on behalf of sea turtle conservation and bottlenose dolphin conservation. And that also followed a February meeting where Mr. Robbins, Mr. Bowden, Jack Travelstead, myself, and officials from National Marine Fisheries Service met and were really coaxed along that it would be a good idea for this commission to get out in front of what was then a proposed rule headed for a final rule and establish conservation measures. We did that through five emergency regulations in April that became effective April 1 of 2005, and then they became permanent in May of 2005. One thing about these, or this proposed rule, it was very awkward for the National Marine Fisheries Service because they had taken the sea turtle part of the rule, thrown it together with the bottlenose dolphin rule, which had had a plan review committee going with those measures all the way, and they tried to glue that together into a final rule. And clearly, they were chagrined at National Marine Fisheries Service that this had occurred because essentially they were taking through something that hadn't even received any review at all. So I can understand they were anxious for us to help them out, and we did. And the effect of our actions, our emergency regulations, one was on monkfish, where we precluded a monkfish fishery on behalf of sea turtle conservation. We also had other regulations that involved establishing a gillnet mesh size that could not be 7 inches or more during certain months of the year. And really what we did on behalf of sea turtles allowed the National Marine Fisheries Service not to take any action in the final rule that they had proposed in the earlier version of the rule. Unfortunately, we also talked to David Bernhardt, who's with Protected Species in the southeastern region, and were encouraged about exemptions that we had proposed for the black drum and the striped bass fishery, that for the black drum fishery, the one thing that could be done effectively was really to establish floating nets for that fishery. And all we were asking in return, that in the month of June, we would not be required to have certain gill net regulations, and you can see at the top, June 1 to October 31st, the drum fishery more applies to the lower panel from June 1 to October 31st. Here is what's in the final rule. At night, fishing is prohibited with large mesh anchor gill nets gear unless fishermen remain within one-half nautical mile of the closest portion of each gill net. Further, you have to remove all gear from the water and stow on board before returning to port. Essentially, there was absolutely no change from the proposed rule and the final rule for these provisions, despite the fact that we provided a very telling amount of information in support of the lack of takes in the black drum fishery, the minor component that it was, but locally important for the eastern shore, and it's as if no one was listening. So the black drum exemptions that we now have in our regulation do conflict with what's in the final rule, and the other part of this involves striped bass. From November 1 to December 31st, at night, fishing prohibited, and gill net gear must be removed from the water and stowed on board. So no night fishing, no overnight fishing. And the other part of this, which became very interesting, is that if you, let me do this, you get a better... The other part is the fact that if you're looking at the demarcation line, we talked several times during our meeting and explain that we have two fisheries. We have a coastal striped bass fishery. We have a Chesapeake area striped bass fishery. And that we were thinking the Colregs line coming across here made a good demarcation line, so that east of that there could be any kind of exemption from tending. Well, that didn't come through the exemption, but what's worse, in the fine print of the rule, I finally realized that they have the Chesapeake Bay Bridge Tunnel as the boundary. So this impacts both the coastal and the Chesapeake area fishery. So what could we do about that? We were pretty upset as a staff about what had elapsed here from the proposed to the final rule. I told Mr. Bowden at lunch, I said, we really didn't call them every month, but we certainly did call them. We were always told things are in progress. Don't know when the proposed rule is going to come out. We had specifically asked for some heads up on that. What we received was just an email that Lewis Gillingham on staff received with the final rule. Commissioner Pruitt sent a letter, and if I can untangle the mess I've made of my papers here. He sent a letter on the 18th of May indicating his displeasure foremost with the rule, and that several of the provisions have surprised everyone, including industry. And the indications are, just to summarize some of the brief points, that a year has passed since we met with David Bernhardt. He's with the Protected Resources Division. And there was an extensive letter sent out that you're familiar with, March the 4th, 2005, that not only outlined our request for exemptions to two small but important fisheries, but they also provided very good data and justification as to why we were asking. And I only have one copy with me right now, sir.
I'll pass it now.
You know, why we were requesting these exemptions. We're quite willing to establish conservation measures, but without a doubt, the striped bass fishery changed so dramatically, and we point out that in our March 4th letter of 2005. Commissioner points it out again. There's been at least a 70% reduction or greater in the striped bass coastal fishery since 2002, and none of that seems to have been taken into account here by National Marine Fisheries Service. For black drum, we again point out the lack of takes. There's observer data. Mr. Bowden showed me very briefly that 2003 to 2005, no takes, that he was able to obtain that information. And it's really puzzling. Final rules are very final. That's the problem here. You know, a final rule is not something that where they will have an internal review to decide the merits. Usually they're waiting for the next amendment to another final rule. But the language I think you'll see is by the commissioner is both strong, and at the same time, I think we're all perplexed with everything that's gone on here. We just can't imagine why there was nothing done absolutely from 2005 to 2006. In a year's time, this information passed many hands. I was told by the Marine Mammal Protection person that I was referred to by David Bernhardt to ask about this. She indicated that our information was important about the striped bass, changes in the striped bass fishery, the black drum fishery, that it was very important because otherwise we would have had much more stricter regulations. And when you look here, this is exactly the same as it was a year ago, and this is exactly the same as it was a year ago. There were two words changed in a year at the end of these prohibitions about the stowing of gear. That's all that was changed. I hope I've covered everything, and I know one thing that's on our minds as a staff is we do have regulations now that are in conflict with this final rule because of those exemptions in Regulation 320 and Regulation 252.
Rick, did you or Ernie have any comments?
I'd like to make some comments.
Go ahead. Go ahead, Ms. Patton.
We had a workshop, National Marine Fisheries Service sends out, in this case, Stacy Carlson, which is the individual he talked to. We had a workshop on Chincoteague, and I don't know why they called it a workshop. Basically, we were told what to do. Oh, excuse me. And I expressed my displeasure with the whole thing because we had acted in good faith. We had passed a lot of regulations that took care of all the problem, didn't put the commercial fishermen out of business. And she said that the state of Virginia had no right in passing anything. I couldn't believe she said that, but there was a lot of people there will verify that she said that it was up to them, wasn't up to us to do anything. And I said, well, you know, for the ones who's not familiar, which she is, they have a stated goal that you have to be below PBR, which is potential biological removal rate. You can remove that many animals from a population, and the population can still reach its full potential. You're not a detriment whatsoever to the full potential of the population. So the goal immediately is to drop underneath that within 6 months. We're way less than half of it before the plan ever come in. So we've already made that mandate. Should work towards zero mortality, taking into consideration the economic of the fishery. She stated that the goal of the act was 10% of PBR, which is nowhere in the act. And I've been on take teams, and I know it's nowhere in the act. But, you know, this was her take on the thing. So, you know, we operated in good faith. His observer program's upset because they never used their own federal observer information. I've got this here. They only used through 2001. She said one at that night to the end of one. So I went ahead and got the rest of the hauls in Virginia from 2003 till 2005 with no takes. So our two fisheries have been basically closed. Next Wednesday, I'm all done fishing, I guess, until the croakers show up in July or August. This year, we finally passed a SHARP plan that was basically the same thing as the federal plan, which is nice. I can have a big increase in my quota, except for the fact I can't fish. So it's really not done me any good. You know, I'd rather have the old proposal when I could fish and make less money than have a more convenient proposal and not be able to work. So this has put almost everybody out on the Eastern Shore, and the way it's wrote is you have to stay within a half a mile the nearest end of your net. Well, a net's a quarter of a mile long, so you can't even have two out. You can set one net and have to stay there to the end of it. Or I guess you could put one each way of you and stay in the middle, which is not the way anybody ever fished in the state of Virginia. And, you know, she told me that she worked very closely with the state of Virginia, and she named Mr. O'Reilly and Mr. Gillingham as the two people she worked with. Mr. O'Reilly never even heard of the girl until 2 weeks ago. So, you know, I think it was some misinformation all along, and I certainly called it to her attention. So where do we go from here? She said final rules are final. There's no way of us, you know, asking for a review. Of course, you know, this is the same woman that told me all this other stuff. I guess there's always court, and I think that's where it's going to have to end, because if we let them close down all these fisheries, before it was affecting 38 people in the ocean in a striped bass fishery. Now it's potentially affecting many times that because a lot of the fish are caught between Cape Henry and the Ridge Tunnel. So you're eliminating all that segment of it too.
Well, I think when we get Dr. Hogarth to, where's Rob?
Right here.
He ought to be answering our letter in a couple of days, don't you think?
I think he will, yeah.
I think once we get that, then we'll elevate it to the Secretary's office and all to the congressional delegation. When you're dealing with the federal government, you have to get beyond this commission. We have to go to the congressional delegation as well as the Secretary's office.
I Rick, think that's the tactic, sir, we took back with the original pound net prohibitions related to sea turtle. That was the exact same action.
Yeah, right.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would just add that just going back in time to the beginning, I mean, this has transpired over a long period of time, and I would just like to thank Rob again for that. I mean, Rob did an outstanding job of compiling extensive data to support the Commonwealth's position in these discussions with the Southeast Federal Office, and it was extremely well supported. The exemptions that were sought were well documented, and I think thoroughly justified. And I think that David Bernhardt and his office clearly did respond to that. I mean, on the turtle side, they appeared to reflect what we did, and then on the marine mammal or on the bottlenose dolphin side, they appeared to just ignore or reject mm-hmm. all the data that was presented, and in a way that was very arbitrary. So, I think a review is certainly warranted, whether they say one's possible or not. I think we need to seek that. And I appreciate the letter that you sent to Dr. Hogarth. I think it highlights the need for that in very clear terms, and I think we need to pursue that administratively in every way that we can.
And let me say those clear terms came from Jack and Rob. I didn't actually pen them. I signed it.
Mr. Chairman, I guess I'm a little bit got a question.
Mr. Holland.
We have state regulations that we pass. And so what you're telling me is that they can pass a final rule, the National Fisheries Commission Service, and our state regulations are no longer valid in state waters.
Not under the Marine.
They can pass a rule. Where is their legal authority to do this?
I'm going to defer that to
basically the supremacy clause of the U.S. Constitution, which says that the laws of the treaties, Constitution, and federal laws of the United States.
But is this a federal law or a rule?
It's Marine Mammal Protection Act.
It's the federal law because the same as one of your regulations is a law in the Commonwealth.
So it supersedes the state regulation.
If it's inconsistent.
All right, well, I think we'll wait till we hear from Dr. Hogarth, and then we'll go from there. On the next, we do have a public hearing scheduled. Who's going to introduce that? You, Rob? Okay. That's item 15 in your books.
This is consideration of Ernest L. George's proposed placement of a pound net in the Rappahannock River, and the proposal was protested during the 30-day comment period. I think it's important to get a little bit of background here. Last February, the Commission conducted a review into the compliance and licensing conditions of Mr. George's pound net at Windmill Point. And you will recall at that time, that net, which was situated in front of the Beach Cove Villas at Windmill Point, was under considerable debate for several months. And ultimately, Mr. George voluntarily agreed to move his pound net to a new location. I will tell you one of the big comments that was throughout the several meetings where you heard that information from the Villa Cove situation, or the Cove Villa situation, was that if he could just move his net out 1,500 feet. I believe that's in the record several times. Well, in this case, Mr. George does want to move to a site which would be 1,500 feet from shore. And it's a new location, and as part and parcel of going through the situation with Mr. George, a new regulation, Regulation 25, pertaining to pound net siting and public interest review, this will be the first case for that regulation. And in accordance with this regulation, Mr. George has fulfilled his part in advertising the location in the Southside Sentinel. The 30-day public comment period expired on April 29th. We have received 7 letters and emails expressing concern for the placement of this new pound net. One commenter did not object to the new location on the basis that the location was far enough from shore. And some general comments were that the pound net would affect property owners' ability to fish from their property, impact the enjoyment of their property, create an additional navigation hazard already hampered by sandbars, an artificial reef, an existing pound net and crab pots, and would result in overfishing. One commenter talked about limiting his access to the North End Wharf, and when Sonia Davis presents the site visit slides, you